Salutations from the Agile Revolution. Tony here.
And Craig. And we're at YAO 2016 in Brisbane. And Tony, once again, we're doing some video, so we've got our ugly mugs on.
Yeah.
On the video again.
I made sure I powdered the head this time so that the technician didn't have to deal with the glare.
So those watching us, it's Phil Craig Smith, Tony Ponton. And we're very lucky to have YAO keynote speaker this year, Rebecca Parsons, with us. How are you doing, Rebecca?
Doing well, Craig. Thank you.
Excellent to have you along. For those who don't know you, you are the CTO of ThoughtWorks.
Yes.
Based out of the US. But the question I've been asking everybody who's been studying, how did you get into this whole software engineering paper in the first place? What brought you into...
Oh, my. So I actually started programming when I was about 13 or 14 years old. I had an algebra teacher who was taking a computer science course at a local university, and he knew I was bored out of my mind in his class. And so he bought another copy of the textbook and gave it to me and said, you know, you need to... go work on this, and he gave me, we actually had a key punch room at my high school. Yes, that's how long ago it was. So he ran my programs for me at Bradley University, and so my first programming language was PL1.
Wow.
As a result of that, and I just fell in love with it.
Mm. And I guess the Agile thing, which I guess some of us know you as well, how did you fall into to Agile discipline?
Well, that was when I came to work for ThoughtWorks. I had been on the faculty at the University of Central Florida prior to that, and then started at ThoughtWorks, and Martin had just been consulting there. I think he had actually just joined about the time that I had started working there, and we had retooled our two large development projects at that time to use XP and Agile techniques, and it had been actually quite some time since I had been in commercial software development, given my time in graduate school and then at the university and at Los Alamos. And so I was relearning how to be a commercial software developer, and I was learning Agile at that time, and it seemed eminently sensible to me.
That must have been a golden age, I guess, and having the advantage to work with some of those pioneers.
Yes.
Like Martin.
Mm-hmm.
In particular at that point. But even ThoughtWorks, I mean, Tony and I, we got our first... start with ThoughtWorks. I remember, I've told this story on the podcast before, but I remember my first Agile project where some ThoughtWorks were coming in and they said, we want you to go and learn this Java language. There's a bunch of people sitting in a room and they seem to be using whiteboards and sharing a monitor. And my words were, well, that sounds stupid, that'll never work.
And some strange stuff, that continuous integration stuff.
I wasn't there though in that originally. It was just writing on whiteboards and things. And so yeah, I owe my whole start in this place to some bright thought workers right back in the early days.
Yeah, as do I. So yeah, we had a lot of fun in the early days and had a lot of success as well.
Mm.
So and kept that association going as we've moved through the years.
So your keynote on emergent architecture here at the...
Evolutionary architecture, not emergent. No.
She was very clear about that,
yes.
So tell us a little bit about your talk here.
So... To me, evolutionary architecture is the next stage of thinking about what does applying agile practices mean to overall software development. And just like, you know, we had to figure out what does it mean to do database design and implementation in an agile way, and stories and you know, the test pyramid, and you know, now we're looking at agile user experience design and how do those things really work. And this is thinking about what does it mean at the systems level to also apply these agile principles and be able to respond to changes in the environment that impact the architecture, much like XP and Agile when it first started, it was responding to changes in requirements. And so it's that really that next level of abstraction, if you will, in thinking about agile software development.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the one piece I picked up I really liked was the fitness function.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't actually talk as much as I'd like.
Yes.
So talk to us a little bit about that and where you see that fits in. And you're very passionate about it. I saw that.
Yes. So I'll start with something like a genetic algorithm as an example. So in a genetic algorithm, you define a fitness function that says this is what I think is good. If it's something like the traveling salesman problem, you're trying to minimize this route length. But there's going to be something that says, this is my objective. This is what constitutes good, and I describe it in this function. And then, you know, the computational engine of the genetic algorithm, it generates different solutions and combines them and compares them against the fitness function and then selects the next generation, always guiding it towards results that hopefully fit the fitness function better. And that's the evolutionary as opposed to emergent. That's the critical distinction. Emergent, you have a much more general definition of what constitutes good. And when you think about clean code, people in general, they might not always code things the same way, but their definition of clean code is relatively consistent. And it really doesn't matter what kind of program you are, you know, using only single letter variable names is not good, whether you're writing a trading system or a shopping cart. However, the architectural characteristics really do change. And that's why you want to specify for your particular system what constitutes good. What are your objectives for this architecture? They might be hard performance characteristics. They might be looking to make sure whether particular data is ever unencrypted at rest or in transport. It may have to do with the way systems might be coupled to each other. There are all kinds of things that make up, this is what I want my architecture to look like. These are my architectural requirements. And you document those requirements with acceptance criteria, just like we do functional acceptance tests for functional requirements. And that constitutes our fitness function. That gives us the guardrails of, these are the kinds of things that I do and don't want to do. These are the things that are more and less important. So if I have to make a decision and this thing helps performance, but this thing helps resilience, but resilience is actually more important to me than performance, and I'm going to prioritize this one even if it knocks that down. So just like other, to use the fancy term for a multi-criteria optimization problems, that's what this is. And we're saying, how can I look at these various architectural decisions and get the best fit for what I'm trying to achieve in my overall architecture? And the fitness function is how we really document those things and what we test against. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an automated test. That's obviously our preference. Some things are notoriously difficult to automate. But you want to have an objective test where we can say, yes, this passes the test because it displays these characteristics.
Excellent.
One of the things is, I was hearing you speak there, so one of our challenges, I guess, on our Agile journey now, you know, since 2001, has been each of the roles adapting and changing, because the core skill set always remains the same, but business analysts realizing that you don't do everything up front, that testers that you don't leave everything to the end, and for developers that you're not going to get something hand on a platter, nor do you kick it over the edge. But architecture has always been one of those difficult beasts, and we spent a lot of time initially just trying to break down the ivory tower problem. Mm-hmm. How do we start to, you know, apart from talks like yours, how do we start to get out there to the architects and start talking to them about some of these new approaches like you've been talking about here at the conference?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things. First, there are many people who are architects because they did something stupendous a decade ago. And in our industry for a long time, the progression was you become a senior developer and then you become an architect. And that's a different role. And I would argue that it's less a different role and more almost a different mindset and a different granularity. You still have to understand technology. Now, of course, if you're a business architect or something, that's different. And I think that's another part of the problem is people just say architecture. And business architecture and information architecture and security architecture and network architecture are completely different things. And so we have to start acknowledging this thing called architecture actually has many different things. And once we start decomposing that, we can start to say, much like we did with data architecture and the refactoring databases, here's a technique that is designed to solve this particular architectural problem in an evolutionary way. And as I alluded to in the closing today, the future, I think, of our evolutionary architecture is going to be a lot of this building up of approaches to solving different kinds of problems, whether it be tools like what the CI servers did early on for continuous integration, whether it be architectural approaches, what kinds of things are we going to start to look at to address some of the issues, make it easier to implement some of these fitness functions across these different architectural dimensions. And I think once we start to get those and demonstrate, yes, you really can make a large-scale change to a production database, and the migration doesn't have to be, you know, as painful as it is in the past. And this is how you might look at more loosely coupling your approaches, and this is how you handle problems of eventual consistency, and here are these different approaches and tools, and you know, expanding the toolbox for particular kinds of architecture. And I think that's really how we're going to start moving the needle, because we didn't move the needle in any of those other roles by just talking about it. We moved the needle by demonstrating, here's how you do it, and look, see it works. Here's some tools to make it easier. And you know, here's how you can continue to do your job, and what now doing your job means in this new context.
Mm. And yeah, your job should be easier, and the team should be going faster.
Yes, yes, yeah.
It's the byproduct, right? Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, so let's get on to the Agile Alliance. I'll switch around. And I'm in a unique position because I've got two members of the Agile Alliance.
Yes. Well, soon to be. By the time this goes out,
Yes,
depending on how you perform on the podcast, right?
Yes, I am taking notes.
So I guess the question for me is the Agile Alliance, where do you see it going? Where do you see the direction?
I think there are a couple of things. Agile Alliance has always, or not always, but in the recent past, really thought of itself as an international organization, but it's only been in the last few years that we've been realizing that. So we have a formal partnership in Brazil. There's an Agile Alliance Brazil organization that we're in partnership with. We, at the last Agile Alliance conference, signed an agreement with a group in New Zealand that is starting up. So we now have an Agile Alliance New Zealand as well, and we are looking at what does it mean for the Agile Alliance to truly participate internationally, as opposed to just having the focus on the main North America-based conference. Even though, you know, we have international attendance, obviously, at that North America conference, but many people felt who were not in North America that it really was a North America-based organization, and we're trying to change that. We're also experimenting with new formats and approaches to the content that we deliver to our members. We've just recently finished the second On Agile, which is a one-day virtual conference. The first one was on architecture, and the second one was on transformation at scale. We also are looking to do our second Agile Alliance technical conference. The first one was earlier this year, that was very focused just on technologists, so architecture and development and much more technical topics, because the North America conference as a whole has to appeal to the entire community, and what we're finding is that there are different subgroups of our membership and our community in a larger sense that could benefit from some of these more targeted conferences, and some people can attend a virtual conference who couldn't necessarily take, you know, the 4 days off of work to go to that conference. So those are the kinds of things that we're experimenting with at the moment. But one of the things that's been a passion for mine is looking at how we can truly be an international organization, and I think you'll see that trend continuing.
I think one of the things that a lot of people aren't aware of is, and you cancel this a little bit, is it seen as the alliance that is the custodians of the Agile Manifesto, and they run a conference in North America.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the really key things is the initiatives that the Agile Alliance runs, which support the community all the way around, and they're not, I guess, as well known as some of those, you know, some of those other things. Are there any of the initiatives that the Alliance is running that you're truly passionate about?
Well, I think one of the important things that we're looking to do is to provide support to the more local groups. I mean, one of the fundamental tenets of Agile is communication and collaboration, and that is certainly much easier to do face-to-face than it is virtually. And so we have various programs to support different kinds of more local events. There's the Open Space Initiative, where we will provide funding and media support to open space events. There is the conference sponsorship, where if you want to start up a new conference, we'll again provide some seed funding, media sponsorship, and as that continues, we'll continue to provide media sponsorship so that your events can get visibility. There's a new initiative this year in providing support for local user groups and what are the things local user groups might need to get started, how can we provide more support to the people who are trying to get those local groups going so that we can spread the word more in the local community. So I think those kinds of initiatives, and speaker reimbursement, which will help local user groups bring in speakers that they otherwise couldn't afford. And so I think finding different ways of engaging smaller groups of our members, whether it be more role-based with things like the technical conference or these other initiatives that really work on the at the more local level, I think are a really important part for it to move from just being a group that puts on a conference to an actual member and community support organization, which is what I think our heart is.
Mm. I want to switch to ThoughtWorks, and so one of the other things you've been doing while you've been at this conference series is you've also been keynoting at the CTO Summit series, and I really enjoyed your talk at the first one we held on what I guess it means to be a CTO, and particularly for you, it must be a challenging but exciting role being the CTO for ThoughtWorks, because it's I assume every day is different.
Yes, and I like that. I get bored very easily, and so having lots of different stakeholders and the chance to work across the broad range of technologies that ThoughtWorks works with in serving our different clients and in different cultures and different countries. And of course, you know, the cat herding and the constant exposure to, you know, a company that's filled with very passionate geeks, and I'm a geek and I like talking to geeks, and so that's an exciting part of the job. But it is being a CTO is different than what a lot of people see as a CTO, which, you know, is the person who sits on the top of the technical pyramid and thou shalt. You know, it's interesting because of the descriptions that I often hear of the traditional view of the CTO is very much like the chief and enterprise architects that people always rail against, and then they say, but when I become CTO, I'm gonna, you know, and it's that doesn't work, and it certainly doesn't work in a company like ThoughtWorks. And so I feel, you know, from the technical direction perspective, it's more my job to set up the communication channels so that I can mine all of this good insight that we've got scattered across the globe, and then roll that up into something that we can present to the market.
So that big is the Tech Radar?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the Tech Radar.
Okay. So when I first became CTO, I formed a group called it, it's quite a boring name actually, the Technology Advisory Board, and we call it the TAB. And as soon as we had one of those, our demand organization started to say, what percentage of our revenue should come from, at that time it was Java or C Sharp or Ruby. And I said, well, there's no good way to answer that question, because I can give you a percentage. If I say, you know, it should be 40% Ruby, is it good or bad that it's 45 or 35? Well, I can't answer that question. So the question itself really was meaningless. But what they were really looking for was what kinds of things should we be looking to sell? What kinds of projects would thought workers really like to work on? And they said, well, why, you know, so we talked internally and said, well, why don't we give them a hot technology list? And so that was a really fun thing for a group of geeks to do, is brainstorm, okay, what would you put on a hot technology list? What do you think is exciting? And after doing that a couple of times, one of the members of the TAB at the time, Darren Smith, actually here from Australia, who was living in the U.S. at the moment, but he's here in Australia, he came up with this visual of the radar, and it's got the four quadrants.
Because you couldn't be respected without quadrants, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, but at least they're round quadrants and not square quadrants. And then it has the four rings. And we started slotting that in, and then we thought, okay, well, it's pretty interesting, let's put it out, and people have been responding to it, and so that's one of the major things that, you know, happens twice a year, is we get a group of people together from all over the globe, and we put the radar together. It takes about 9 to 10 hours of serious cat herding to narrow it down. When we start, we probably have candidates roughly 250 to 300 items, and we try to get it down to something closer to 100. This last time, I think it was 110, and couldn't quite get it down any further. But
you must get hate mail, right? When some vendor says, "Why am I out on the outside edge?" Or
yes, and I also get the, "What do I have to pay to get on the radar?" And it says, "Okay, you've just excluded yourself from the radar forever, because no, you cannot pay to get on the radar." We had one company that wanted to put out a press release saying that we had endorsed their company because their product was on the radar, and it was an open source product that they just provided support. I said, no, we didn't put your company on the radar, we put the product on the radar. And so yes, there is a lot of that. And there's also, sometimes, you know, we get beat up because where's Microsoft on the radar? One time it was, hey, you know, you're going to .NET, you know, where's the Java stuff or the JVM stuff on the radar? And one of the things that people don't realize, and we're trying to figure out the best way really to visualize this, we generally will fade something if it hasn't moved after two times on the radar. So once something's gotten into the adopt ring, it's going to stay there twice, and then it's going to fade. I mean, the adopt ring isn't very big, so we need to, you know, we need to keep moving stuff out of there. And so there's a lot of stuff that you don't see on the current radar because it's faded.
Hmm. It's just good practice.
Exactly. You know, you won't find, you know, continuous delivery on there anymore. I don't think there's all kinds of tools that support it and such, but those things fade. Hmm. And so, you know, trying to handle that and figure out how can we present some of these more historical views is a lot of what we're thinking about right now.
Hmm. And radar itself is open source, am I correct?
Correct.
So yeah. Anybody can create their own internal, in their company, radar for themselves.
Yes, and we're actually encouraging that as a good structure of a conversation within a technology organization on where do we stand, you know, are there things that we want to start moving away from, are there things that we think we can take better advantage of, are there practices that are perhaps not as widely adopted that we think should be, and we've run it with several of our clients. Our internal IT organization does it for themselves. There's actually two versions of it. One is more of a, it's basically radar as a service, and there's also an open source modification that will allow you to input it with just an Excel spreadsheet, and it'll do the visualization for you. The visualization is actually less important than the conversation, but that's no big surprise. But it also does, you know, just like in many things, making then that radar visible is, okay, this is where we want to go, you know, for this project or in our organization. And it provides an inspiration for people who are trying to figure out, well, you know, I've got some free time, you know, what should I learn? Or, you know, is there a problem, you know, if companies do things like hack days? Well, if there's, you know, something that's in the, we want to move away from this, well, what could we do on a hack day to advance that? Mm. So.
Excellent. One of the things that I've always been inspired about with ThoughtWorks is your commitment to diversity. The programs, there's more than I can mention, but and we often refer to the male-female diversity, but actually programs also in lots of other spaces. I know mm-hmm. there's, in this country, there's things around getting more Indigenous people
yes.
into tech as well. And I just personally want to applaud you, you and I know you've got to be part of that, for doing that. You were mentioning you were recently at the Grace Hopper mm-hmm. Gathering, which had an extraordinary amount of people, didn't that?
15,000 people, 1,000 men. So anybody who tells you that there aren't any women in technology, and they sold out, was it either 21 or 27 minutes?
Wow.
15,000 tickets, and they sold out in less than 30 minutes when they opened
it up. That's pretty
neat. Yeah. So it's not that they're not out there.
in saying that, they're not out there, but there should be more.
Yes, yes.
And that's mm-hmm. things like this that helps to get them in. But
well, it's not just getting them in, it's keeping them.
Yes.
And when you look at the statistics, women leave technology at over double the rate men leave technology. And, you know, many people say, oh, well, it's because of their family responsibilities. But when they do the surveys, only about 25% of women say that they left technology because of family responsibilities, whether it being, you know, caring for parents or caring for children. And about half of those, you know, depending on which study you look at, they leave because they don't like the environment. You know, they don't feel like they're getting opportunities for advancement. They don't feel like they're being respected and treated well in their organization. And it gets to the point where it's just not worth the trouble. It's easier to either go off and work for themselves or just get out of the industry completely.
And that's a sad thing. As a father of a daughter, mm-hmm. I like to think that, you know, as my daughter comes through, she's already looking at the technology stuff, even though she's young, that she's going to have the best, you know, possible opportunity mm-hmm. to move forward. So, you know, I can only applaud the things that ThoughtWorks doing in that space.
Yeah. Thank you.
And most recently, and I'm going to hack the name, a pretty large honor was bestowed upon...
Yes, the Anita Borg Institute for Women in Technology has a program called the Top Company for Women in Technology Award, which we won for the first time this year. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the nice things about this is it is based on very objective criteria. They've done a good job of specifying what technologists at different levels look like, and that helps normalize across different organizations, so we can compare our percentages to the percentages at other organizations. And, you know, they have a very rigorous research methodology that underpins this. And, you know, other companies can benchmark how you're doing, and then they do additional surveys on, okay, what kinds of programs are you running internally that get you to where you can be. And if you are part of the study, then you get access to all of that information. And of course, ABI also publishes a lot of research addressing issues of recruiting, advancing, and retaining women in technology.
That's brilliant.
Excellent. So one last thing, being an Agile podcast, I guess it would be remiss of us to ask this. You're part of the Agile Alliance. ThoughtWorks is a large part of the Agile community. Just putting your little crystal ball, you know, looking at the future hat, what are your hopes, or what are things that are sparking your interest as we start to look forward as a community? Where are we going?
Well, I think there's some interesting implications for some of the way technology is changing. And I know within the Agile community, there's the, are you a principles or are you a practices person? And I'm very much a principles person because I actually see those principles as being quite widely applicable. And when I start to look at things like the platform thinking that many organizations are looking at, what does it mean to approach the creation of a platform in an Agile way? When I look at machine learning, okay, what, you know, we have all of this discipline around testing at different levels of the pyramid. What does that mean in the context of an algorithm that changes itself? In fact, what does it mean in the context of, you know, you're doing exploration and you're trying to see whether you can uncover patterns in a data set, and it says no? Is it because your algorithm is wrong or because the pattern doesn't exist? you know, so how do we start to approach some of these things? That one's actually easier to solve because you just use standard data. But as we get these algorithms that are more data driven and sensitive to data, those things become harder and harder to do. What does agile mean in those contexts? And I think that's going to be quite exciting is to look at what does it really mean to be agile when we're doing some of these different things.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So, building on that, what's next for ThoughtWorks? What's the horizon for ThoughtWorks? I don't want the 10-year plan, obviously, after
I've heard
today.
Fair enough.
I was listening. Tick. Right.
Very good. Yes. Note. Well, we're continuing to expand globally. This year, we've opened an office in Santiago, Chile, in Barcelona, Spain, in Zambia. On the African continent, we're continuing to expand into new geographies as well as opening new offices in our existing countries. We're looking to get more involved in smart cities and trying to think about how is there a way to approach smart cities in a more open way, in a more privacy respecting way. Similar things around continuing our advocacy for security, privacy, transparency, and you know how do we do things with data analytics and such in a way that we don't have to compromise our privacy. So looking at things around that, but we're also continued. We're still very committed to being a custom software house, but we are also looking at how can we move some of these business applications to take advantage of open source. So we have invested a great deal in something called Bomni, which is an open source hospital management system based around OpenMRS, which is an open source medical record system, and we're deploying that in many developing countries and looking to expand that and use that really as an existence proof that you can have open source that is dealing with mission critical and in fact life critical applications. So you know, can we do things to develop some similar momentum behind open source e-commerce or retail systems to provide technology support to smaller organizations in other parts of the world.
Awesome. So if people want to know more about you, Rebecca, or ThoughtWorks, what's the best place to find out more information?
I am a very I'm a very quiet tweeter, but my Twitter handle is at Rebecca Parsons. I do have a website that I blogged when I was on my sabbatical in Uganda. That's HTTP, RebeccaParsons.com. www.thoughtworks.com has all things, and actually a fair amount of the content we create also ends up on martinfowler.com.
And agilealliance.org for the Agile Alliance.
Yes, and there is a wealth of information on agilealliance.org to help people get started in new applications of Agile, as well as some more sophisticated content. There's an initiative that's been running for a couple of years around scaling Agile adoption, and so there's some you know, some materials on what does it mean to really do this stuff at scale. So there's a wealth of material out there on the on agilealliance.org.
Excellent. Well, I guess from the podcast, we have this little tradition. Well, we finish up. So we usually do a Viva la Revolution. So okay. We're hoping you join us in on that.
Okay.
So until next time.
Okay.
Viva la Revolution.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.